Okay, welcome to a special one-off CMPS team meeting where we've invited some people to attend and ask questions about the CMPS project proposal that we presented at the TSC on April 10. And the team has spent quite a bit of time gathering answers and thinking about answers for the next time we present at the TSC. I'll give the presentation again to refresh your memory. And there's the presentation is broken into three sections. One, an overview of the project, the TSC questions and answers, responses to the questions, and then some of the use cases. So if you recall, the configuration and persistency service is a real-time new platform component that we're proposing, and it's designed to serve as a data repository for runtime data that needs to be persistent. And as a standalone ONAP component, this project will provide data layer services to other ONAP platform components and use cases and microservices that require persistent configuration or operational data. We're also going to be enhancing our SIGS development as well. And it's focused on storing runtime data related to network element instances. So this is a basic overview of the CMPS project. So there are lots of databases. There's 35 databases in ONAP already. And we should stress that this project isn't meant to replace those databases. It's meant to add a database for, mostly for network element data related to what you would expect microservices to use. That doesn't preclude other components from storing data in it, but that's not its primary purpose. So there is data that can come in from a PNF that might need to update the database, operation from SO or controllers or workflows or building blocks can also update data from that can cause update data to be updated, which may also need to read or write data to the database. When ANEI makes publishes a change, for such as a PNF disappearing or appearing in the network, the database would perform a synchronization or basically listen to that update from ANEI. And then, of course, the most important thing is microservices that operate, and we'll talk about some more of these in the third section that I mentioned at the start of the call. So microservices that would need to update or read or write or use data is the main purpose of this project. As such, it can store what we expect at start, at least configuration data. I'll talk about more about that later. Information that's specifically not inventory information and any other information that it might need for its use case operation. Let me stop there just for a few seconds. Does anybody have any questions? Because this is sort of the big picture overview of everything.
So this is Scott Blanford. Just the way this is drawn, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is this saying that PNFs can store data there themselves?
So it's a good question. There's a standard defined VES event that's defined in ONAP. It's a new a VES event that's standards driven, 3GPP driven. And that's being introduced in R7. And it was worked in R6 through the standards, but it will be introduced in R7. And there's a whole use case actually around this this new thing. The idea is that XNFs can use this standards defined event using the namespace 3GPP provisioning, which says basically that'll be the topic, right? And this standards defined VES event can be used for a number of different things. But the idea is that the PNF can report to ONAP for various purposes, not just this thing, but basically parameters that it would need to report to ONAP for whatever reason, right? And things can listen to this namespace topic and determine if something needs to be updated. So we envision if there's some need for this parameter to be stored, that's one avenue for it to store data into it. Does that make sense?
And then how is that? Is that used by the PNF later, or that is just
There's no hard and fast answer to that. I mean, it could be used by the PNF later. So basically, once that a parameter is obviously a very flexible variable sort of thing, it could be used in all sorts of ways, right? Once it's once we would define it in the database, we would basically see, is this a parameter we care about? I envision that we would store it like that. And then other things would know or look or see or access it. So it's kind of like, there's no simple answer to that, right?
But I guess still you would not expect PNF itself to have direct access to this CPS data store. It's the UNAP components that have access to it, not the
network. Correct. Yeah. If that was
I guess then the other question was that the how does who is actually the consumer or receiver of these incoming notifications? I'm not sure if that is settled yet. I mean, here is shown that the CPS is directly actually listening to the topic. I think another option has been discussed. Is there something in between that actually listens to the topic and makes the decision to put it in the database?
Is there something that makes a decision whether something? Oh, okay. So again, that's somewhat variable as well, right? So the database doesn't own any of the data per se, right? It's just a repository. So all of the intelligence should reside within the ONAP management framework, right? So if a microservice says, and we'll talk about that when we come to some of the use cases, you'll see some examples which might help you. So the microservice would make that decision, this is a piece of data I care about, I'm going to store it, right? That's the main avenue of usage, I think, of the database, right? This is just a database, so it just stores configuration parameters, how, who, when, where, and what can access or when can access something is the application, right? So think about your laptop. Your laptop has a database in it. Does it own or change or modify any of the data? No, it's the applications that run on top of your, it's the Word and PowerPoint and Microsoft Excel that determines how that data is used and stored and stuff, right? So, and we'll talk about some of that also in later slides as well.
So is this just a generic database, or are you actually proposing some schema for it that's ONAP specific?
That's one of the questions that we'll be addressing directly. Hold on to that thought.
Okay, and also back to the PNF CM notify, it sounds like, if there's no little agent in between, it sounds like it's just kind of being persistently stored as like a log. Is that what's happening?
So there's a lot of questions on that. Let me just jump to that. There's a couple slides on that. so let me just talk about that. So a PNF has some parameter update to report, and this update originates from the PNF and is reported through this new standards defined VES event with a namespace through GP provisioning, right? Every VES event comes into the GCA VES collector.
Okay, so just quick, let's look at step one. So how do we know, how does the PNF know that specific parameter needs to report it?
Well, that's not gonna have a fixed answer, right? I mean, this ONAP is a platform. So we give the ability for the PNF to report, parameter stuff to ONAP.
Right.
The logic of how it knows to do that is entirely up to, can be defined in however it's defined, right?
Is it configured?
But do we have a need for that is the question.
Right. Is it all parameters, or do you configure it?
Is there a use case that requires this, right?
Well, there is a use case being introduced to allow this to happen. So I think if we look at configuration management in general, if there are changes that happen. So there's thousands of parameters that you use to configure a PNF. I mean, thousands. So, it's hard to make a general broad statement upon all those thousands of parameters, right? So from the standards, well, from the standards itself, there's a couple hundred that are defined. Just, and that's just the all vendors and all service providers standards, right? So you can say, you know, if there's a change in something, and here's a table of all of the actual attributes, right? And you can say if I don't know, the you know, policy ratio changes or something, I might need to report a change in that, or something has changed because of that. So then there are things where the PNF will expect an outside entity to tell it, I need some value to change, right? So there are times where something comes up from the PNF, and the other times where things comes down, right?
So I have a question, because I'm kind of curious how other services are going to access the data, which is stored in the database. Would they just go directly and access the database, or there will be some API? Or
that's the third section of my talk. So I'll hold on to that thought, and I have a number of slides on that topic. Yeah.
I just had a question on your first slide. Hey Ben.
Sure.
Ben,
go ahead.
Let me go back to your first slide for a second. I just want a question. When you show these arrows here, read, write, or what I'm a little unclear is, are these interactions here, are they hypothetical, or do we actually have, you know, specific requirements, stories lined up to make changes in AII, to post specific things? I can't really tell here what, when you show something going into this service, what things are concrete use cases?
So if I could proceed, all these following slides, I talk about each of these things, right? So I have arrows on each.
Well, but you just said that in the example you just gave, right? You said that it could do, like, you just went over that one, and we asked the question, which specific items would do that? And you said it could be. I can't answer the question. So I'm just trying, is there actual code proposed in DCA to take certain VES events and publish them to a certain specific schema in this database? Like,
no. So hold on. Let me answer the question. So basically, there is a vehicle, right? This new use case that's coming in R7. There's this new use case coming in R7 through GPP ONAP ORAN alignment standards to find notification over VES. That will allow a XNF to issue a VES event, a standard defined VES event, with a namespace 3GPP provisioning topic. And as all VES events through DCAE, it publishes that thing on the bus. Things interested, microservices or ONAP components or the CMPS listener, can choose to listen to whatever topic they want to listen to, right? That's just how ONAP works. Things that get published on the bus are, you know, things listen to it, right? So the same thing with ANEI. ANEI there's been an update in ANEI, right? And that ANEI update, basically things that are interested in, there's been an update in ANEI. And so this read and write isn't, you know, ANEI doesn't go and reach into the CMPS database per se, right? What it does, rather, and I'll talk about that in this slide here, where I talk about ANAI. There's an ANAI slide too. There's an ANAI slide too, right? That basically, when ANAI needs to make, when ANAI has an update that occurs, say an XNF appears or disappears, it publishes something on DMAP saying, you know, I've got an ANAI update, right? ANAI software itself doesn't reach in the database at all. That's not what happens. But the CMPS project will have something that listens on the Kafka bus for that topic, right? And other things, you know, many other components in ONAP are the same thing. They have things that if they're interested in INA updates, they'll listen for that topic, and that's what happens. Does that make sense?
So why do we need the database to listen for other database updates or other events and just put this in the database instead of just microservices that are interested to listen on that topic and collect the data purely from DMAP?
Okay, I'll maybe give Ben a spell to have a drink of water for a second, because he's got fairly strongly here for a few minutes. So specifically, ANAI is the master for all inventory in ONAP. And if you want to have some CM data that is not in ANAI, but is reflected what reflects what is in the network, so that is on an XNet, then you must have some relationship between that CM data and something that is inventory, some XNet. So what we're talking about here with this red arrow between ANAI and the configuration and persistency service is primarily, and at the moment exclusively, some kind of synchronization at the beginning at startup to say these are the XNets that we're interested in. And then if and when an XNet is removed from ANAI, then we want to remove any related CM data from the CMPS data store. So that's the kind of thing that the ANAI would be looking at. As to why other components, other microservices or components within ONAP may want to go directly to the CMPS as opposed to subscribing themselves to heterogeneous XNFs, is that's a lot of work. And two, the data is typically used or may be used by multiple other components within ONAP. So having each and every one of them talk directly to an XNF would be burdensome on that XNF. It would be overloading its O&M processor or whatever allocation it was given, whatever resource allocation it was given for O&M. So it's not a very efficient way to work. So that is one of the reasons why you would want to store configuration data for the XNFs in one place centrally and have anybody who's interested within the ONAP to actually make use of that. It doesn't have to be the entire CM tree for the XNF. It can be a subset of that tree for the XNF. It depends on what you describe as part of the model. And that is something that I know that Ben is going to get to, because it's a very big part of what we're trying to propose here, is that this is a model-driven store, persistent store, for primarily for CM configuration data from XNFs. I hope that answered at least some of the questions and gave Ben a chance to catch his breath for a minute.
So, you know, I'm kind of curious about the argument of using the resources, because as far as I understood what you said in the beginning of the presentation was that all the data that is stored in this new database, it's coming from Vima, right? It's going to come from different services, maybe from VEST, maybe from ANAI, but it will all be received using DEMA, right? So then...
Well, the first, we will not be receiving the initial sync of information from ANAI. So we will actually make a query via the REST interface to see what inventory is available. And then subsequently, we will be using a subscription to see what has changed. So we're expecting that through the existing interfaces in ANAI, we will be able to understand when XNFs have been added and removed. And that's primarily what we're interested in from ANAI.
So basically, you're always going to keep two databases in sync, right?
Not two databases in sync, but the amount of information that we need from ANAI is only that which is sufficient to uniquely tag CM data to a specific XNF instance. That's it.
Yeah.
So then when ANAI says that instance of the XNF has been removed, we get a notification. It could be via DMAP. I'm not going to say exactly how that notification arrives. We get a notification in CPS, and we remove that CM data. That's an example of the type of interactions we have with ANAI.
I would say, So it's the main thing that we need, so before we go to the next question. So the main thing we need is basically ANAI has a view of what network elements and things exist. And essentially when something appears or disappears, the CMPS database, if it has a record for that, which it probably would need to know about that as well. And that's the main thing interaction with that it has with ANAI, right? So if we look at the CMPS database, you know, it's gonna have some entry for a PNF. And it may have a view of things that are outside of ANAI, for example, logical objects like cells, for example. and if a PNF appears or disappears, it will need to know that, as do many other ONAP components. We're not inventing anything new here, right? So when a network element disappears, ANAI publishes on the DMAP bus, hey, I've got an update and something has happened to the state of the universe. And all the other ONAP platform components, including CMPS, would say, oh, I'm interested in that. You know, what changed? Well, this new PNF appeared, or this new PNF disappeared, or this existing PNF disappeared, right? And when that happens, we just need to update our corresponding records, right? Nothing more, nothing less. Simple. We're not reinventing anything new here. This exists. It's a new, it's an existing mechanism that ONAP uses to tell other components that something has changed in the network. This thing is a completely existing thing that exists in the infrastructure of ONAP, and all we're saying is that CMPS will use that existing infrastructure to update those records where there are corresponding elements.
And then on your use case, where was the read? What was reading this information? You flip back to the case, what's reading the information?
What's reading the information? So primarily I think the reading is the microservices are the things that are going to be, I mean, anything that's interested in the data can read it, right? But mostly the network element data of microservices are the thing that's going to read and write and interact with the database the most. So,
and I think, again, if I can clarify then, this very much depends on the use case.
Yeah.
So the use case will bring in components, parts of ONAP that actually need to understand pieces of information.
Right.
And it's part of the design of that use case as to whether or not some data will be stored in the configuration and persistency service, where that's efficient to do so, or where that's easier to do so. It depends on the implementation of that use case. So the use case will decide what is actually stored, and then the use case will decide which components are going to write to that data and which components are going to read that data.
I think one of the confusing things here is that this is looking like it's just a proposed database that sits out there. One of the things that would make it much more helpful for all of us to figure out is, what is that database for? What is it?
Wait. So we're halfway through and I've gone through one slide and you're asking things that are answered on other slides. So let me proceed, if you will, then. And I think many of these questions will be answered as I go through these slides. Okay, so let me ask to change the way we're doing this now, because we're halfway through the time. Let me go through all the slides and I think many of your questions will naturally be answered. So let me ask to hold off all questions for a little while until I make progress through my slides, okay? So we've already actually, just through the dialogue, have walked through all of these already. So in the TSC questions and answers from our presentation, we looked at all of the questions that were asked. We looked at the logs of the questions and the notes that we took during that day. And then the team has basically clumped the questions into groups. So there were questions related around the microservice principle. There were questions related around the runtime catalog concept. There are questions around, gee, your project proposal looks enormous. You're trying to do 5,000 things. what exactly is it that you're going to be doing? You can't do all these things. There were questions around performance and latency. There's lots of questions even just now and today about things related to the interaction of this thing with ANAI or why not just extend ANAI. There were questions from Pamela and Catherine about, are we unifying all the 35 databases in ONAP and creating a mega monster database? There are questions around, gee, you only have a couple of people listed in your project resource. Is that really enough to make this happen? There were questions around, why not just spin off and extend your R6CC SDK solution? And there were questions around, why not just use a COTS IT DBMS solution? So I have slides for every one of these. Let me go over these things. And I'll stop at the end of, I'll go through all of these and then we'll stop and have a question answered before I get a third section of the presentation, which answers the thing that Scott was just trying to ask about how are these things used, because we have a whole bunch of, in fact, let me just jump ahead to that table just so you see it. So there's a whole bunch of use cases and proof of concepts that we'll be talking about, which basically shows you how the database is going to be used and in R7. And with various use cases. And there, I think when we actually see how the database is being used, I think that'll also answer a lot of your questions that you're starting to ask. Okay. So The first question was asked by Christoph Opesiak, who's on the call, I believe, yes. doesn't this violate one of the very basic microservice architecture principles from this link? Of which we have three answers. One, I mean, data can be shared across microservices. And if you look at that same thing, it also talks about sharing information across microservices. So striking a balance between centralized data and distributed data, where something owns its own data and writes to its own data, and sharing data is an important concept. I think both should be allowed, right? So there are cases, of which I'm just showing one example, where basically you have multiple, you know, you have things that are producing data and multiple things that are consuming data. So this was given by Shankar, an example that was given by Shankar for us in the OFSON PCI use case one. He also is involved heavily on the team calls. So he said, you know, there's an example here where basically SDNC is updating some data, but other things, the SON handler in the OF system are needing to read that same data. And it's also important to note that basically the database, and as we mentioned before, that the database just stores the data. It doesn't own the data. And other components or use cases will basically own that data. So it provides a place for notably microservices to store real-time network, network management element information, right? So Shu asked, can't we use the runtime catalog idea? And isn't there some conceptual overlap between this and the CMPS? Yuri Malikov had helped us think about and respond to this question. And he said that basically the runtime catalog is just an idea. And the notion of that idea is that basically each ONAP component wanting to store ONAP management data wouldn't need its own database, but would rather consolidate it into this runtime catalog. So I think an important distinction should be made in that I think this idea of this runtime catalog is to merge all these 35 databases into this runtime catalog. And the CMPS specifically is that's not its original focus. Its focus is to, and I'm showing the information from a slide from a third section of the presentation, but basically it shows data from a use case that would be network and real-time network element management configuration type data. So the main focus of CMPS is to store real-time network element information. It's not to replace all these project component databases, right? It's the idea is that some use case needs information about real-time network element information or configuration information, such as a cell value or PCI value or neighbor list. And that's it's a place where it can store that data. There was questions about, gee, you know, you have, if you look at the project proposal, and maybe it's good just to show the project proposal again, just for a few seconds. So this is what we presented, right? The project proposal, and there's a lot behind the project proposal because it's meant to show the entire project as a whole, right? It describes all of the things that the project is conceptually. But of course there's a lot here, right? And there's, if you look at the scope and what it's supposed to do, there's a lot there. And obviously we're not doing all of that in the first release, right? All we're really doing is, reading and writing data, the ability to set up the database and maybe provide some really rudimentary access control. And mostly we're catering to use cases, which we'll talk about again in the third section of this presentation in R7. And then in later releases, Honolulu and Istanbul and Kyoto will extend and do those other things. So really in R7, we're really just doing really rudimentary stuff. And I think we've also added this to the actual project proposal at the end here as well. There wasn't really a section for it, but we added it at the end to make that clear. Okay. So performance and latency, there were some questions about, and there's also a section also in our project proposal about about performance and latency. Basically, questions arising around, you know, how much and how fast and how big can you, you know, how fast can you send stuff down? How fast or how slow do things need that data? Will that impact on that performance? How big of a bulk of data can you send? So, a lot. The answer to that, though, there's not necessarily a hard and fast answer to that. Some use cases will have a lot more tolerance for latency. Some things will need data in a little bit more real time. Some things will have low volume. Some things will have higher volume. We're actually in the third section. We talk about a POC that we're performing in R7, which will give us data and more information about that. So. We are going to have more information about those specific numbers as we actually work with use cases. And I think week by week, we'll come together and get that information. But early on, if you actually just look at the use cases, again, in the third section of this presentation, you'll see that most of the use cases are just handling a small handful of data, 4 or 5 parameters, right? So, so we don't expect that to be a big issue. Why not just extend ANI? I mean, ANI already has all this infrastructure to handle data, to manage data, to store data, to graph data, and so forth. why not just reuse all that infrastructure, right? That's a more conceptual thing. So there's a separation of concerns and purposes between ANI and the CNPS. So ANI is meant to provide, and this is directly from the from the charter of ANI's page, its project page, right? So ANI is an ONAP subsystem that provides real-time views, resources, and services and their relationships. it forms a registry of active, available, and assigned assets. It also maintains an up-to-date view of multi-dimensional relationships among these assets, including the relevance to different components of ONAP. And if I were to write a charter for CNPS, CNPS is meant to provide real-time network element information. The I in ANI is really just an inventory of a real-time inventory of things that exist in the network, whereas CNPS is meant to provide a body of data that for example, microservices could use, right? And so there's a lot of things that you don't need to store just to keep track of inventory of something. You know, you only really need, does this thing exist? Yes. Does it not exist? You know, or no, yes or no, right? and one of the drivers behind this project is we're noticing that ANI is starting to become a kitchen sink for just to toss in any old parameter into ANI. But that's kind of getting out of the scope of what it's intended for. The PNF network element information is also likely to grow and scale in the future as well. And one of the mantras of the CNPS project is we're intentionally storing stuff that doesn't belong, you know, XO non-ANI inventory information. CNPS could also be decentralized as well and have dynamic schema, although ANI also supports this as well. Okay. Are we creating, Catherine and Pamela both asked, you know, are we creating a mega monster database? And I think that wasn't clear in our April 10 presentation, which we should make clear at the TSC. I mean, the scope of the purpose of the CNPS project is to address and cover a current gap in ONAP, and that's to store network element related information. It's not intentionally aimed at replacing all of these, other databases that exist in ONAP. It's not meant to replace these ONAP platform databases. That was never the purpose of the project. It's meant to store network element manage related data. So the scope of and focus of the project is basically to store network element data to cater to various use cases and proof of concepts. So resource commitment, there are only two developers listed in your project proposal. And since then we've added a lot more as time has moved on, right? So and So, you know, there are many companies that are involved in this project already. Nokia, Ericsson, Bell Canada, Wipro, AT&T, they've all contributed resources, and, you know, we're still in the sort of architecture and requirements-ish phase of the project. So, you know, we've designed the flows, the component proposal, the project proposal took a half year to do. And there's a lot of work you'll see from the use cases. We're engaged in many use cases and many use case teams. I'm on a zillion calls each week. Bell Canada has also we'll talk about their POC as well. And as I said, the third section of this presentation is dedicated to the use cases. We'll have more people as time goes on, I'm sure, and we have a body, I think, and a commitment you see from many companies. So why not just spin off what you've already done in R6? You have something that works in SDNC and CCSDK. Dan Timoney has been a great help in helping us guide through something that was working. And we needed to deliver something in R6 because there was an immediate need by use cases to have something, right? So, and the answer to that is basically an architectural one. Architecturally, we presented many times five times at the architecture subcommittee, and their recommendation itself was to have this as a separate component, and that's one of the main driving reasons, I think, why we're doing that. It was never meant to be absorbed or be a part of CCSDK, and it was meant to stand apart from and internally to another component. But again, as I mentioned, in R6, we needed something because there was an immediate need to have something. So we had to find an immediate and quick solution. Vimal Bhagwani said that, his thought was that you're better off having a dedicated PTL rather than having this be a sideline to-do item for Dan, right? So. And the last question, and then I'll stop after that to entertain some questions. Why not just use an off-the-shelf ITD BMS directly? What value added essentially are you adding here? And so at the core of CMPS will be one or more extant databases. I mean, there will be some sort of COTS database. We're not inventing a completely new database. You know, we'll be using something off-the-shelf, Postgres, Cassandra, MariaDB. Internal to the CMPS database, there might be eventually, not in R7, but eventually there may be more than one database for history and for some of these other functions that are talked about in our project page. But the value add to CMPS is to add functionality on top of those databases and to provide internal ONAP components and microservices APIs that can intelligently access that data, an API that allows telecom ready API with a uniform interface, a model driven functions from design time activities in ONAP, the synchronization of ONAP functionality and ANI updates, and the ability to add allow other functions and ONAP to sync with the database. Okay, so those are all the major questions and their topics. And again, we have about 15 minutes, and I need maybe 5 minutes to go over the use cases. So we'll entertain some questions here. So are there any questions on any of these things? Or would you?
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I'm still fine. I understand if you limit the scope of the database to just what you need for ORAN or RAN automation, it could be separated because somehow you might not need all ONAP to build these parameters. Just to support RAN automation, as an example. I understand also that it's maybe too much for one PTL. We're already responsible of two projects, but I'm still puzzled somehow if we cannot do something like I have many things in my mind. Can we just, is it really a DB that we need, or could it be a table inside ANAI? So that's already one question. So we reduce. Is it really, there is really a big, you need multiple tables in your C content, in your database here, or could it be just a table or one or two tables in addition to ANAI? So we can just extract that for RAN and also and anything related to this domain.
So you're kind of asking three questions at once. Let me yes, try to answer one at a time here. So so the first is essentially, you know, one of your things was you're just asking just now is a relationship to ANAI. And so maybe it might help we have sort of slides on that, right? So we expect essentially that there is some kind of a set of parameters. Yeah, and if you want to see examples, they're available, right? So there's some set of parameters that are related to PNFs, for example, like the attribute T reselection parameter defined in 3GPP TS38.304, and it belongs to the, you know, an NR frequency relationship. So for that particular parameter, right, some plugin or microservice, you know, is going to be interested in that parameter. And this is clearly something that doesn't belong in ANAI, right? And I'm just taking an example, right, of which there are 200.
But we could change the name.
Let me try to answer your first question.
Sure.
So what's the relationship between ANAI and the CNPS database? I mean, ANAI, again, is, I think that the main purpose of ANAI is that it wants to maintain a view of the resources that exist. And I would say a minimal set of things about that resource related to inventory, right? So if we take a look at what does ANAI store related to PNFs, I mean, many of these things are already not inventory things, okay? But things like maybe serial number, you know, those sorts of things, is something that's inventory type information, right? And in fact, the 3GPP TS38.695 defines things that are, and these are very commonsensically related to inventory, such as serial number, vendor name, data manufacturer, last service. These are inventory type kinds of information, right? Which you would expect maybe to have something in ANAI. And arguably, even these probably aren't that necessary, right, for ANA just to know that something exists, right? So conceptually, there are already things designed in ANAI, and it has already a schema of things that exist in ANAI. And we see that some of those things make sense, and some of these other things don't make sense to be in ANAI. But conceptually, at a conceptual level is what we're talking now. You want ANAI should maintain and just care about essentially enough information to know that, you know, this PNF exists or not. CNPS is conceptually different. It says, okay, all I really want to know from ANAI is, you know, what happened to this PNF? Did it disappear? Does it exist? And we're going to be storing different kinds of information for use cases, right? And Estelle is a very good example. So we had four or five meetings, and Mikkel is on the call, and Mikkel kind of led the discussion of, you know, how do we, cells are such an important concept in 5G that we need some solution for cells in R7 and beyond. And we talked about basically the solution is to have CNPS manage these logical objects, because it's not something that ANAI or even the platform components will care about. This is really only something that the microservices will and analytics will really care about. So this is an example of basically where you have a logical object being maintained within the CNPS through its record structure. So the cell object, of which there are many parameters related to a cell, right, can be basically maintained within the CNPS database. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, it does. But I'm still concerned if you are in the public cloud, right? So where will you have your database? Because any in-out data, it's a cost, right? It's also a cost. And you will need to maintain a synchronization, as you said, to ENAI. So that's why I was thinking, can we just think, okay, particular, special table to store the ORAN, RAN parameters. So at least we maintain a single DB. And if somebody only won this part, but he just create a DB with this table, and that's it later on. But if he works with ONAP, at least he has only one DB to manage, and we can rename the name of the ENAI if we want to. And then I pose, so that was my feedback. And then I pose another comment. I agree, maybe for Dan, who is already PTL or CCSDK and SDMC, it would be an overhead, so I don't deny it. But having a particular project when we are challenged to reduce the number of components, we need to find alternatives. And it's also a cost for the CI pipeline as well. So we can maybe operate like we have the OMS PTL with DCAE or the ESR PTL under ENAI. I don't know, but we also need to think about the CI/CD readjustment if suddenly we create something separated from CCSDK. So that's also an aspect.
Can I just comment?
Yeah.
Sorry, Karen Johnson here. Just on that, Catherine, I guess the two questions that you seem to be raising are, first one is related to whether or not this configuration data is a separate concern from inventory data. And then the separate and second and separate question then is, if it is a separate concern, is it enough of a separate concern to be sort of forked out as a separate project? I think maybe if we can identify those as the two key questions, and maybe if we could address them one by one then. And what Ben, and I guess you could argue, and you know, this isn't black and white by any stretch of the imagination. You could argue that, yes, it would be possible to put all of this information into the ANAI and maintain a single database for topology, inventory, and configuration data. That will simplify some aspects of a system, and it will complicate other aspects. I guess the team that have worked on this, as I understand, I've only really started getting engaged more recently, but there's been quite a team working on this for quite a number of months, as Ben alluded to, and they have identified a significant number of reasons why we should be considering inventory data as a separate concern. But is that still, I guess the question I would ask, have the responses that Ben raised here help to allay some of those concerns, or is that insufficient? Is it simply around the project management aspects that you think it would be simpler to put the information into ANAI, or is it the case that you think that really there is no separation between what we put in ANAI and what we would have in a configuration persistency service?
Well, man, I think for me, I guess I don't even necessarily. Yeah, I look at ANAI, and there's definite configuration information in there today. So maybe we need to further delineate what exactly, because, you know, we do. There's both the real time, like the vServer information of the state of those servers, and that has various configuration data about it that overlaps somewhat with what you've discussed. But then there's also like SDNC creates the VNFC objects, which stores the configuration data like IP addresses and subnets and things like that we assigned. Those are also in there. So when we say this is, you know, we're delineating because we're putting configuration data elsewhere, I'm not entirely sure on your definition of configuration data, right?
Well, so I would argue that two wrongs don't make a right, right? So I think there is, you're absolutely right, there is configuration data in ANAI already, but I would argue that doesn't belong in ANAI. And through the years that I've been working on ONAP, I mean, I noticed that other use cases have a need to put non-inventory information, and they don't have a place to put that stuff except in ANAI. And so that's one of the problems that this project is trying to address, right? And so I think maybe now it's good to let me go over the third section of this.
You can move on. You didn't really establish that it, what's in there was wrong. You just said it was wrong in saying this. Okay. You can move on.
Yeah. And I guess that's a crystallized position, isn't it? That, do we put it all in one repository, or do we have separate concerns in separate repositories? And I think when you start to see the numbers of parameters that we would potentially need to be managing, you'll start to see that even scalability concerns will start to come in if you have them all in a single repository. So that use cases that only really concern themselves with inventory and topology are going to be overburdened with dealing with sheer volumes of other extraneous information. And I guess,
and then there's the frequency of change on top of that. I mean, they're very, very different characteristics. You don't add and remove XNFs, physical network functions, every couple of seconds, whereas some of the configuration parameters will change on a second-to-second basis. And then the number, potentially, of clients that are actually querying that, ANAI would have to change to support that level of characteristics change. It's a different set of characteristics. And the amount of variations that you would get in terms of the different vendors provide different models. They provide different representations of these things. So there's so many different reasons why they are different types of data, and they don't necessarily belong. You could, in theory, put them into the one data repository exposed by this one service interface, one set of service interfaces. But I really would question that, whether that was a good idea or a bad idea. And I think we'd be revisiting some of the reasons why the architecture team suggested pursuing a separate project, which was one of the questions that was asked earlier on. If we need to go back and pull out all those reasons and express them, then absolutely we can. But I think it's a very bad idea to put some of this data into ANAI. It's kind of self-evident, but it can be explained.
Okay, so we have about 5 minutes left, and I'd like to just at least go over like a minute on each of these use cases here. So we have five major use cases or proof of concepts that are going to be using the CMPS database in R7. One is model-driven CMPS, a proof of concept development led by Ericsson for showcasing model-driven CMPS operation. It's a schemaless model-driven type-safe access to data, which is owned by applications or indirectly by network functions. The OFSON PCI use case, of course, is an ongoing user of the CMPS and kind of kicked off the whole thing and is very core and central to the project. So we attend their project meetings. So SON, of course, has three major concepts: optimization, self-optimization, self-healing, self-configuration, and it's focused on one of those things, self-optimization, PCI. But as time moves forward, we can see many of these potentially other applications of SON being explored as well. Network slicing, I attend the network slicing calls, or have attended many of them. And you'll see that there are lots of parameters that they're looking at to model in, and I see Andy Mayer's on the call too. They're looking to model in R7, and there's a body of parameters driven from 3GPP TS28.501 that they're looking to use and store in CMPS. But the A1 adapter mobility standards harmonization use case is enhancing the A1 adapter interface capabilities so you don't have to manage A1 policies supporting multiple A1 targets. And then the state management POC, Bell Canada, is going to be leading a POC to track states, and they're focused on state management using CMPS. So
that's state of what?
So, as I understand it, they want to track like the availability state, like the X.733 availability state type information. So the like if something is in maintenance or something like that, right?
So all right. So the state of a VNF, but it's sort of the high level state.
Yes.
Of VNF.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to turn this over to Kieran here. You got about 1 minute to go for the model driven CPS.
I can probably do that in about 30 seconds. So basically, what we're looking at is specifically focusing on the model driven aspects of the configuration persistency service, enabling the onboarding of updated configuration models from the network or from the SDC, the service design center. so that they can be onboarded directly into the configuration and persistency service without needing any kind of software update or delivery from an ONAP component. So the models are directly onboarded in. The information which is persisted in the CPS can then be reflecting and complying with that model. So you can onboard a model. You can maybe just jump back to the previous slide, Ben, if you don't mind. You can onboard a model through the modeling toolchain. The model goes into the model service. The configuration and persistency service uses the modeled information in the model service to effectively provide an understanding and a reference to the data that's persisted in the underlying database. We also want to look at different persistence technologies so that we can support multiple backends, both for, as I think Ben alluded to earlier, being able to support historical time series data, but also being able to support schemaless repositories for the actual storage. That was a whistle-stop tour. Probably not the most effective.
Thank you very much. No, that was good. Thanks. Okay, so I think a lot of people are already pretty familiar with the OSAN PCI, I hope, because it's been presented since R3. Again, the basic idea is that they have a simulation of 2,000 cells, and they're updating physical cell identifiers, there's only 512 physical cell identifiers in 5G, so they need to make sure those numbers don't collide when new cells come and go. So they're storing, most notably what's important to CNPS is that they're storing information related to cells, right? So they need to know about cells, they need to know about neighbor lists, they need to know about PCI values assigned to cells, and they need some place to store and manage and organize and update and look at information related to cells, which is definitely something that the platform components don't care about at all and shouldn't, right? So there was a long discussion initiated by Michaela, saying that, you know, how do we manage cells in ONAP? We should give that some thought. And so the we present on multiple forums about that, and the solution is basically using CNPS to manage logical objects in that sense. The end-to-end network slicing use case as well has had over 4 or 5 releases now has evolved, and they're doing some RAN and core slicing implementation. But what's important to CNPS is, of course, that the 3GPP TS 28.5.1 talks about a number of parameters which Chu Yi Gao is going to be designing, I'm sure, with the modeling team, to take a look at the things that are in the standards and the body of parameters that are related in those standards, to figure out how to access, store, and model that information, right, in an intelligent manner. So these are just the things that are coming from the standards, and we expect that these are the sorts of things that they would need the CNPS for. I don't have too many slides. So the A1 policy extension, can someone talk to that for just a few seconds? Let's see there. So Michaela is on the call. You want to talk about that for a few seconds?
I mean, we have the one policy that, just to avoid confusion, we should consider like network function parameters, application level of these parameters. And we don't expect to do this in release 7, but I think at the long term, it could be of the interest to store this as configuration data, also from ONAP.
Thank you. And then lastly is just the state management from PSA. I don't have slides because they said they were in progress. So we'll have more hopefully from the Bell Canada team. Okay, so we are over time. Sorry, guys. So we do meet every Friday. So if you still have questions, we are more than happy to entertain any questions you have. just let me know, send me an email. And it is in the ONAP calendar as well. If you just go to the ONAP calendar, you can find our meetings every Friday. At 1 p.m. UTC time. So thank you very much for your time. And if you have other questions, just feel free to email us. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for joining.